Hi, I'm Emily Hazard.
I'm Becca Anderson.
And I'm Elliot Hazard.
And this is Grey's Anatomy Uncut, a podcast where we discuss and analyze episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 18, Scars and Souvenirs, which was a song sung by Max Stalling. Don't know who that is. Original air date was March 15th, 2007, written by Deborah Kahn. She also wrote 303. Directed by James Frawley? Is that how you would say that?
Sure.
This is his first episode ever directing, and it had 22.68 million viewers, which is down from last week. Any follow-up?
No, I don't think so.
All right, do you have an opening statement or anything?
Sure. I think one of the cool things about this episode is, I think in a lot of cases, coming off of a three-part episode, a lot of other shows would have kind of, I don't know, had like almost like an off week or just kind of like an, you know, we're getting back into it. But I like how, I don't know, I feel like this episode comes back really strong. I mean, it's always a great time when Thatcher ends up in the hospital, comes back for all of us. And I think it's really cool. We get a good amount of stuff from Christina's past.
So is that because you like seeing him or you like seeing him ill?
He's not ill in this episode.
Oh.
At least, I mean,
drunk?
Not physically.
They're just coming to see Meredith.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Because her mother died.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's just always very entertaining, and the way Meredith acts around him is fantastic.
I kind of find it always kind of painful when he's in the show, because
it's
so awkward. Yeah, I guess
I enjoy that pain.
I would have to agree with you, but what's funny is that if you think back to 218, the parallels are so... Mm-hmm. Like, they're following a very obvious formula. So after 216 and 17, that was the bomb episode, they had this light funny episode where Meredith almost died in those two episodes, and it was this light funny episode afterwards. And then somebody from a character's past comes to the hospital to stir up drama. In 218, that was Mark, and in 318, it's Colin Marlowe. And this episode includes Thatcher Gray, 218 and 318 both. And at the end of the episode, George ends up sleeping with somebody shocking. And that happened in 218 and 318.
Oh, interesting. That's
so
kind of cool.
I think it's kind of interesting how formulaic it is, in a way.
Yeah.
So, okay. Ellie, do you have anything you want to add?
Nope. Let's dive in.
All right. Can you read that opening speech for us?
Oh, okay. People have scars in all sorts of unexpected places, like secret roadmaps of their own personal histories, diagrams of all their old wounds. Most of our wounds heal, leaving nothing behind but a scar, but some of them don't. Some wounds we carry with us everywhere, and though the cut's long gone, the pain still lingers.
Hmm. That kind of reminds me of the theme of 218 as well, which was yesterday.
I was about to say, I could not
remember
tell you
yesterday. That was the name, and it was all about like the past
That's
and everything.
Right. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So we open up, and the song is "Come to Me" by Coop.
Love that band. And it's Izzy in the shower, and Alex walks in, and he's moving in.
I'm super excited that Alex is moving in.
Yeah, it's like, where has he been living? Which was a total lampshade. So Izzy just busts into Meredith and Derek's room, and Derek was like, I was asleep just a minute ago. Nobody cares. Nobody cares, Derek. And
poor Derek.
And Izzy goes, what's wrong with where he was living before? And Meredith was like, I don't know where he was living before, which is like a total, all the audience was asking, like, where the heck was Alex living? People are what matters. You don't like people. Is this about your mother?
And the way Meredith delivers that next line.
No, I had a near death, whatever. I was dead, and now I'm not. She's so weird. She's so neurotic. I love it.
I just paint with all the colors of the wind.
Like, and Izzy's like, oh, you're crazy now.
Who the hell are you?
What's the...
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. Okay, if Meredith is Pocahontas, is Derek John Smith?
It's interesting.
You know, in a weird twist, Derek was the one that lived out in the woods.
Wait, is Derek Pocahontas then?
Yeah, probably.
And Meredith is John Smith?
Yeah.
I love it.
That's amazing.
Can you imagine Derek's like, paint with all the colors of the wind?
Oh my god. He just has, that actually makes sense because like the hair, because like Pocahontas' wind that would like blow her hair. Yes. Derek has like the same thing. Oh my yep. gosh.
All he needs is a raccoon friend.
Pretty sure.
Is that Mark?
Yeah, that's Mark. No, Derek doesn't have any friends.
Right.
And then Alex, with this, like, smarmy smile, he's like, oh, don't worry. I'm not looking. Not interested. And I'm like, good.
Because he's interested in someone else.
Hell yeah. Bum, bum, bum. All right, so now we're going to cut over to Callie and George's hotel room. George is obsessively talking about Izzy. And it's funny, because he can't put together why he's so obsessed with what Izzy thinks. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't understand why her opinion matters so much to him.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very easy step, or a very easy bridge for me to cross, but apparently it isn't for him.
Well, when you're not in the situation.
Yeah. And he describes Izzy as this. She's selfish is Izzy's problem. She's not selfish. She's generous. But she's self-absorbed. Her problem is that she doesn't see other people's perspectives. How do you feel about that?
I agree with that.
I think I agree too.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean I don't like her? Absolutely not. No?
In fact, I love her more because of it.
Who doesn't see other people's perspectives?
Izzy. That's what...
Katherine Heigl.
If she's so attached to her patients, you know, on a personal level, then wouldn't that make her an empath?
Yeah, and so... But this is what George is saying, is her problem is that she doesn't see other people's perspectives. And that's what I'm asking is, do you agree with that? So I guess you wouldn't agree with that.
I don't agree with that. If anyone would be like that, I would say it would be maybe Christina or Bailey.
So you think that George is saying this as a defense mechanism to try to explain why Izzy's so against his marriage?
I think he's possibly maybe in denial, maybe misreading the situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. George has never been one to read situations appropriately, so why start now?
that is
see, this is why you're here. You help this podcast.
Oh, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and then even George goes to say it's weird because she's so ridiculously compassionate with her patients. You think she'd roll off some of that with her
business. Oh, so at least he picked up on that.
See, I almost wonder if, like, half of it is because she cares so much about her friends, is that she can't, like, she has to say what she thinks.
Yeah, and that's what I've always loved about Izzy, and I think that's the main thing that people don't like about Izzy, is that she's very true to her emotions, and people are bothered by that.
Just says whatever.
Yeah, she says what she believes. And it's like, you can't have it both ways. But whatever. And then Callie goes, why don't we just don't talk about her anymore? And... to which I say, Callie never listened to our podcast.
So then we swap back, and actually not back, we go back to the hospital. So now we go to the hospital, and it's in the locker room, and Izzy is going off and complaining about...
She is roasting this marriage.
Which, I mean, we live for.
Yes.
Seems work appropriate.
Well, you know.
Honestly, this is probably the most appropriate thing that's happened in this hospital.
It's been a long time.
But the HR department at Seattle Grace is just dealing with
They're like, not that gray girl.
How many employees are paying off HR at Seattle Grace?
Derek's probably like...
The amount of fires that they have to put out on a daily basis.
Yeah, and not even when patients smoke when they're on oxygen.
Ooh, deep cut. That was good. It was from this season.
What an idiot.
The dragon. Looked like a dragon sneezing. Anyway, okay. So she goes, George's stupid marriage crashes and burns. He's going to want to move back in, and he's not going to be able to. His life will be in shambles. He'll finally realize his dad is dead, and he'll realize what a fool he was by getting married to someone he doesn't really love. Damn. She, like, no longer gives a flying rat's ass.
Did she ever, though?
She did a little bit.
I question that. She's been dissing this marriage since the start.
And then she goes, is that what you want? And then Meredith goes, that's exactly what I want. And I love the way she said that. Like, I want a quote, I want a t-shirt of Meredith saying, that's exactly what I want.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's so good.
So then Meredith has to address everyone because, and you know.
Including the audience.
And say, okay, everyone, let's do this once. I'm fine. She's cremated. I picked out a beautiful urn and she's hanging out in the back of my closet, which Weird place to keep your mother,
also,
but okay.
Metaphors. Hanging out in the back of my closet.
But it's not a skeleton.
I mean, but it might as well be metaphorically.
It's just the burnt up pieces of her mother's skeleton.
Yeah.
I mean, that skeleton's technically in there.
Yeah, true.
Poor Ellis.
She's like, this is where I ended up. Now I have to just sit back here while Meredith and Derek are being weird in the other room.
It's musty in here.
Where are all the mothballs?
Why do Derek's clothes smell like the woods?
Because he's a goddamn woodsman. So, then we're going to move on to this Jane Doe scene, and I don't have the patience. So the gist of this scene is that Jane Doe is still a Jane Doe, and nobody really cares except for Alex.
What a concept.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going over to Izzy and her patient, Mr. Schofield, which if you ever watched Prison Break, that really hit me. I was like, is this Michael in the future?
No, it's definitely Lincoln.
You think so?
I don't know.
Be like, I got shot 50 years ago.
Just makes more sense.
Lincoln is such an idiot. Who? Who's who in Prison Break? On Grey's Anatomy.
What's the guy's name? The really creepy
Teabag? Who's Teabag?
Dr. Heron.
Oh, Sydney Heron. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. You think she's Teabag? She's the opposite of Teabag.
Would, like, Mark be Teabag?
They're both bizarre in their own little
yeah,
way.
Yeah, but Teabag was, like, a murderer.
Yes. So who's killed someone on this show?
I mean, Meredith has got to have killed someone by now.
So is Meredith Teabag?
Not homicide, right? Just malpractice.
Both. I don't know.
Can you just...
Who is Teabag? I think it's like Alex wants to believe he's Teabag, but he's really not. You know what I mean? Is the warden the chief? It's, yeah. Okay, who's the guard that hates them? Skullick or Skull... What's his name?
Bellick?
Bellick, yeah. Bailey?
She's like, God, these people.
Michael is...
I guess it would have to be Meredith.
Meredith.
Yeah.
Lincoln is then... Not Christina.
The dumb. None of them are dumb. Lincoln's just dumb.
Is Callie Lincoln?
Trying to get rid of him. I don't know.
Is Derek Sarah?
Yes.
Okay, this is too far. All right.
You're naming characters I forgot even existed, so I think it's time to move on.
Yeah. Ooh, Christina is the Michael's
cellmate.
Whatever his name was. Yeah, his cellie. He was awesome.
Oh, the wacko guy?
No, not the wack one. The nice one. The Latino guy.
Something happened.
Remember Tweener?
Oh, yeah. Would that be Burke?
Oh, my God.
Sucre.
Sucre, yeah. Burke is Tweener. Oh, shit. I'm in too deep. Okay. Anyway, so back to this patient. So he has, what's the metaphor here?
For
this bullet. So, because we know that this patient's supposed to represent Izzy in some way. So this guy was shot 50 years ago, and the bullet never bothered him, even though it was there the whole time until a couple months ago. Is the bullet the marriage?
Well, I think it's, I think it's some way almost like her feelings for George, and she didn't start realizing it until he got married. And started, like, having a problem with him, like, basically being with Callie or anyone else besides her.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Okay, now the reason why Elliot is here today. All right.
Besides the fact that he's hilarious and we love him.
Oh, thank you.
So we meet Derek's friend, which I don't believe that this is really a friendship. I think she's using him. But her name is Helen, and Elliot does a really good impression of Helen. So, how are we going to do this?
And then? I have never heard this, so this is going to be live on air reaction. She has some sort of something or other in her head. George says a lot of big words that I can't say. And so they, like, I guess, keep going in every couple of years and taking more of it out.
Okay.
As it regenerates.
Okay. As it, like, regrows. Okay. Yeah. Can you just read this line? He says that because we worked together in New York.
He says that because we worked together in New York and I was the only one who never had a crush on him.
Okay, I think you need to warm up with stop looking at me like I killed your cat. Uh-huh.
Stop looking at me like I killed your cat. He says that because we worked together in New York and I was the only one who never had a crush on him.
Oh my god, I'm crying.
I don't even know what her accent is supposed to be. I feel like I started with Colombian and ended with Russian.
Yeah, just read a couple of these bolded lines. I just need it.
Okay.
For my soul.
The recovery takes forever, and it's not like when Jake was around. I go through this by myself now.
Yeah, it is some sort of weird, like, kind
Stop
of Colombian.
Stop looking at me like I killed your cat. The decision is made.
Love it. Okay, so anyway.
It is a weird accent. It's like half
Maybe
Russian.
Maybe she's Middle Eastern.
Maybe.
I don't know.
So she's the only one that never had a crush on Derek.
Apparently.
And that really bothers him. I love that they threw that in there. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah. I also in some way like the kind of metaphor of her, of the fact that she's trying to give up. And it's kind of like this undeniable thing that, like, in some ways Meredith gave up in the last ferry boat stuff. And I think, well, because that's something that I think bothers Derek.
Oh, it for sure does.
And so I think it's supposed to be like another kind of metaphor of like giving up, like that whole thing. And like, I mean, obviously, like, we see how badly he takes it when she gives up. And so
yeah, like it's been in the back of his mind since the ferry boat, and based on what I know about future dialogue, it's still something he thinks about. Mm-hmm. Later into season 3, and so it's almost like this patient being at this episode is just not a coincidence. It's just this perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, now we're gathering, because apparently nobody in this hospital ever does anything. We're gathering outside of the conference room, and
Really, don't they have patients?
I know. It's like, what are they doing? They're waiting to see who the chief is meeting with, because apparently the chief has brought in a ringer to fill his position.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from Stanford, and all the professors there loved Christina.
Which, odd, like, I can see that.
Maybe.
I mean,
she's a good student, but she's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, but I could see a lot of, like, professors being, like, impressed with her, like, driven, yeah, like, intelligence, that kind of stuff.
And then Burke walks up, and he's just like, everything is coming up, Burke. And he's about to have a bad day. He's like, how are you doing, Gray? And she's like, oh, I'm fine, sir. Thank you. And then George goes, she doesn't like it when you ask. And it's like, what is wrong with Meredith? You know, like, Burke is like, I was just trying to be nice.
She needs a sign. Don't ask me about my dead mother.
Yeah.
She's in an urn in my closet.
Yeah.
She's not taking visitors right now.
Yeah. Ellis.
We want to play our respects.
It's just the closet. Get out of my room.
Go away.
Can you imagine? Meredith, like, comes home and someone's just, like, sitting in her closet, like, with the urn talking. Like, oh, hello.
Do you think Derek is freaked out by the urn in the back of the closet? Do you think he's going to start hearing, like, Ellis's voice?
I have a question. If you were with someone and they had their mother's dead ashes in your closet, would you be freaked out?
Well, it wouldn't be in my closet. It would be in their closet.
Fair, but still.
It depends.
In a closet.
It depends. I mean,
I think that's pretty common, actually. To have an urn with someone's ashes in it. At least a small one.
Yeah.
But I feel like normally they're on, like, a mantle or, like, you know what I mean? Like, some kind of, like, display.
Mm-hmm.
Not in your closet.
I mean...
But that's Meredith.
We get the fact that... We kind of got that Ellis never really approved of Derek.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we understood that she never approved of Derek because she didn't want Meredith to make the same mistake that she made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, deep down, I think she probably did like Derek at least a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
But now there'll be no resolution for that. Like, Derek will never know.
Yeah, but also, I think, like, who cares? Because, like, Meredith didn't really like her mom. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, there's something about that. It's like, oh, there's this dead lady, like, in the closet, and I never got to, like...
dead lady.
Never got around to cleaning her up.
It sounds like Meredith just has, like, bodies in her closet. Like, oh, man. Just really filling up in there.
Derek's like, oh, my God, what is that smell?
Spray some Lysol. Febreze.
He's like, your room kind of smells weird. She's like, it's fine. It's my new cleaner.
Oh, I'm out of Febreze. I'm sorry.
It's the dead body in my closet. Anyway.
Bodies.
So The door opens and Colin Marlowe steps out. And he is a smarmy little skinny British dude. And
this was the other reason why I said her professors liked her.
Okay, from a male perspective, what do you think about this guy?
I think he absolutely abused his authority, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that he walks up to her and starts grabbing her is completely inappropriate.
Well, yeah.
Especially in front of her colleagues. I mean, what the heck?
Yeah. He gives me kind of like the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah,
That's what I was going to say.
He's a creep.
Is that he kind of gives me like rapist vibes a little bit.
Catholic priest vibes. Oh,
fighting words.
Deep cut.
But like, kind of like you look at him and you're like, yeah, I would definitely guard my drink around him. Like, don't want to leave a drink unattended around
that guy. Yeah, he's kind of weird.
And the British makes him even more smarmy instead of less smarmy.
Yeah, it's like this kind of creepy British guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like a creepy chimney sweep.
Like Voldemort.
I can talk to you!
No!
Christina! I can touch you now! Wait, should Colin Marlowe's voice be Voldemort's voice for the rest of this podcast?
So he creepishly hugs Christina, and I, like, remember the first time I watched that and just being, like, completely shocked and like, what the hell did I just see?
Meredith's face when she sees him grab her ass is so funny, and then Izzy's like, oh my god.
Don't they all kind of make a surprise?
Well, it's weird. Like,
it's really weird. Okay, so we come off of that, and Burke is like, well, it appears that close seems to be a bit of an understatement. So this is Burke being really jealous, I guess. And then Christina goes, well, I didn't think you wanted to know about every guy I ever slept with. And he was just like, system overload.
Just like, could not compute.
Yeah, he was just like, restarting.
It's literally like an Avatar, that like bird, like,
yeah. Ellie knows exactly what we're talking about. You and I will be the strongest couple of all.
In the fall of the Fire Nation. And now we get arguably one.
I think this is like, this comedic scene.
I love this
was
scene.
Perfectly done. First of all, whatever Katherine Heigl is doing with that apple, I love it. Like, the fact that they had her eating an apple during the scene made it so much better. Second, her her hair looks goddamn amazing in this scene. I mean, it's like perfection.
Whoever did her hair needs to work on Callie's hair, because it still doesn't look great. I don't...
And just everyone's clicking on all cylinders. Like, Ellen's great, Sandra Oh's great, Katherine Heigl's great. It all works.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to read this.
Okay.
Elliot, can you be Christina? You be Meredith.
Okay.
And I'll be Izzy.
Meredith doesn't actually say anything.
Oh, okay.
Until they go in the closet, but I don't think we're going to do that.
Okay, I'll be Izzy. So Izzy's walking down the hallway with Meredith, and Meredith could not give a shit about what Izzy is saying. Like, she is not listening.
At all.
At all. So Izzy goes, hey, what are you doing tonight? Because I don't want to go home and find Alex there, and it's just the two of us, and it's weird and awkward, and he doesn't know if he should talk to me or not talk to me. It's just such a weird situation. I'd rather be group awkwardless, you know?
Yeah, so then Meredith, like, looks up and sees Thasher and Susan Gray and just completely ducks into a closet. Izzy doesn't notice and just keeps babbling on.
Which is so brilliant. And Izzy goes, I don't want him to just be standing there staring at him. Meredith? And then Christina walks up.
Have you seen Montgomery?
No. Hey, what are you doing tonight? You want to come over? You and I never really got the chance to hang out. I think it might be kind of fun. And then she notices Colin Marlowe and ducks into the office as Izzy's checking her pager.
Into, like, the same closet Meredith is in.
Yes, yes. And Alex just moved in, which is Meredith's brilliant idea, and he has a thing for me, so it's so... What the hell? That's the best part, is when she's just like...
Well, I think she kind of says it, and, like, Colin and, like, Susan are, like, kind of really close, and so I feel like she's just like, what the hell? And then, like, walks away, and they're like, what?
It's, like, the perfect transition scene. Nobody is listening to Izzy at all. Which, actually, though, probably has a deeper meaning, because they probably threw that in there to show that, like, Izzy doesn't really have... She's not really friends with Meredith or Christina. She's not really friends with Alex, because she's trying to avoid Alex. And the only person she has is George.
Yeah, but he's, like, not talking to her.
Yeah, exactly. So, in a weird... this is a comedic scene, but it's also very sad, in a way.
Yeah, so...
So then...
Christine and Meredith have their little moment in the closet.
Really nothing happens here, except they're just talking about how they're trying to...
avoid people, basically. Avoid
their it's also awkwardness. Never clear why they can't just share the closet.
Yeah, I know, yeah. You're right.
They're like, you have to get out, and it's
I need this closet, but like, you're over there.
And you're like, why? Like... You're like, the closet is big enough for both of you, clearly. And if you just shut up, they wouldn't...
Yeah. I just wanted them to cut over to, like, Colin and Susan just standing there being like, we can hear everything you're saying.
They did do that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, you know we could hear you in there, right? Loud and clear.
Except he says it in such a creepy voice.
Yeah, okay. I also just love Christina, and she, like, opens, oh, hi.
Yeah, that was the best part.
Like, she's like, oh, I didn't see you there.
And then Susan walks into the closet. And is like... we heard about your mother. I'm so sorry. And Meredith is like, thank you. And she says it like...
Dead face. Yeah, like, dead eyes. I hate you.
And we find out that Ellis didn't want a funeral. Meredith just assumed that they're at the hospital for the baby, but they're really there to see Meredith.
Which is kind of sweet in a way.
Yeah, but she's not used to
that
being treated that way, so she doesn't know what to do with it. So then Susan kind of invites herself over for a dinner.
Yeah, dinner. Also, can we just appreciate the way that Susan describes Thatcher?
Her husband? Yeah, let's hear it.
He made some mistakes, but he's not a monster. He's just an inarticulate person who spills food on himself a lot. Ew!
And he won me over.
Yeah, I know.
Charming.
What does that say about you?
And Thatcher's like over in the corner drooling and spilling on food on him.
That's my man.
Meredith's like, now I really don't want to have dinner with you. Like, ew.
He's just spilling chili all over himself. Yeah, where did you even get that?
Oh my gosh, I love it when he got that.
I have to buy him new shirts all the time. And Thatcher's like, I've been wearing diapers because I've been having accidents.
What? Anyway.
So then we cut...
After that horrific moment.
We cut over to Colin and Christina, and Colin goes, I can't believe it. I don't think I can do it. No, but I should try to do a British accent, right?
Yeah.
I can't believe you hid in the closet when you saw me. As if it wasn't... just tragic. It might be the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
Ew. Which, honestly, everything he says just has this, like, twinge of, like, ew to it.
Like, layer of just, like, slime.
Like, I don't know.
You're like, this man is the definition of a skeeze.
I don't know, like, he was calling her adorable, and all I got was like,
Burke is like, ew. I thought Christina Yang wouldn't hide in a closet because she didn't want to talk to me. Which, clearly, she doesn't, because she... It's like, who just, like, stop talking. Like, why is this guy still talking? Anyway. And, yeah, then he says, like, creepy-ass things, like, you grew your hair. It's lovely. It's lovely! Harry!
I also love the end when, you know, she tells him that she's marrying Burke. And he goes, congratulations, I'm being genuine. Or whatever. Can I give you a congratulatory hug? And Christina just goes, don't touch my ass.
Okay, if you're ever in this situation where somebody says, congratulations, I'm being genuine, run.
Nine times out of ten, they're probably not being genuine.
Like, the fact that they have to clarify that they're being genuine, it's not a good thing. Don't touch my ass. Okay, so... So, the song is Girl-Shaped Love Drug by Gomez. That's actually a pretty catchy song. Mm-hmm. But we're back with Helen, and Elliot is back in the spotlight. What does she say, Elliot?
Oh, my stomach is growling.
Oh, my God. Yes. Basically, the purpose of this scene is George figures out, I guess, that breakfast at, like, basically the hotel that he's been staying at is a lot more expensive than he thought it was. So it kind of...
Wait. Because George says, yeah, I kind of live there at the moment. My wife gets a deal. And then Helen says...
That's one hell of a deal.
And so now the red flags are finally shooting up for George. He has been climbing a tree of red flags, but now is when he's noticing...
This is the one that really stuck out to him.
Yeah, because...
And basically he has to basically, like... pull it out of Callie that, like, of how much she's actually paying for this room and, like, all this stuff.
Which, is this a really big deal? Like, okay.
What's a big deal is that he didn't know her financial situation before he married her.
But is it a big deal that, like, they didn't talk about that? Or...
Yes, that's
No. But what I'm asking is, like, he's almost blaming her, being like, how dare you marry me and not tell me? But I don't think that's fair on his part. I think it's like they both needed to talk about that and they didn't.
Well, I wonder if there was some sort of, like, talk because, like, about, like, George's daughter. Because she does say, like, at some point, like... Like, you know, she's like, oh, like, I'm not, like, gonna charge, make you pay more or something. And so I almost wonder if, like, he talked about his finances and she just wasn't honest with him.
What I mean? Then I would see it from George's point.
But, I mean, that's a complete assumption and, honestly, probably slightly of my bias towards not liking Callie. But, it also is just weird to me that, like, you would live in a hotel room with someone else and not tell them, like, the actual price you're paying. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that'd be, like, living with someone and then being, like, oh, like, you're only going to pay $200. Like, not telling them, like, what rent is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's kind of weird to
me. It's also kind of weird how George never thought about it before.
Brandon, yeah. Like...
This is, once again, George's cluelessness in interpersonal relationships.
Or is this supposed to be, a way for the show to highlight, like, they got married before they knew everything about each other. Like, see?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's clear.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's been clear for a while, but this is just another, you know, big example of...
Yeah, but this one, like, Callie rips in with this burn. Like, I actually kind of liked this. And he goes, wait, so I've been paying $200 a week, what, for fun? No, I use it to tip house cleaning.
Housekeeping.
Or housekeeping. And I was just like,
damn,
that's awesome.
She's like, you're poor, George, I hate you.
Yeah. You're poor, I married the help. Yeah, so now Derek is getting really emotional over Helen.
Which I think is still part of, like, the recentness of the whole Meredith situation. Like, I think he's very much comparing Helen giving up with Meredith giving up. And
mm-hmm. So he's, like, projecting his personal drama onto her a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so now we're back with Izzy and Schofield, and they're going to take the bullet out. And, okay, what's his obsession with, I need to see that bullet?
I mean, he says at one point, you know, he thinks that his own side shot him. And so I think it's almost like a validation for him of, like, what he's thought for all these years. And, like, later he goes in and talks about how, like, his thinking that, like, ruined friendships, ruined his marriage, and, like, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's almost just, like, a validation of, like, I was right kind of thing.
Ooh, so that adds another layer to it, then.
Yeah.
Because Izzy could ruin her friendship with George, but as long as she's right, it means something. Then
yeah,
if she's
it's like
wrong.
She needs validation of, like, being right.
And Callie's like, what are you going to frame it? And Mr. Schofield's like, no, smarty pants. I was fragged a couple of weeks before it all ended. And then he goes, do you know what it's like when your own men turn on you? And the chief is like, yeah. Because all of his employees are going crazy.
They've been crazy.
Are going crazy for the chief
they were
position.
They were crazy when he hired them.
And Callie and Izzy kind of stare at each other at this, and the look could only be described as... bitch.
Thank you for that, Emily.
You're welcome.
Okay, so now we get the song High by... Sap?
I think it's P-S-A-P-P. It's the same... PSAP? It's the same...
One of those three is probably correct.
It's the same artist that wrote the theme song.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like PSAP.
PSAP! Christina slept with Colin Marlowe. So now Meredith is telling Derek the lowdown. And again, Derek would have no idea what's going on in this hospital without Meredith. I am 100% sure of it.
Does he even work in this hospital?
Yeah.
I also love, she's like, hey, Derek, we're going to have dinner at my father's house tonight. Like, oh, and Christina slept with Carl Marlowe. He, like, completely ignores the father part. She's like, he's like, what? Colin Marlowe?
Mm-hmm.
Derek, like, cannot grasp this. Literally, like, Meredith starts talking about something else. And he slept with Christina. You're like, Derek, get with the program. Come on. Catch up.
And it's just like, what? You slept with an intern? Like, what? Derek's like, how dare he? That's my thing.
While married.
Yeah, true. True.
So this guy's trying to upstage me.
Yeah. Watch this.
If he takes over my man pain bridge, yeah. I swear to God. And basically, Derek suggests, you know, have dinner at your house. It's your place. I'll come. I'll be your wingman. It'll be fun.
or it'll be fine.
Yeah. Anyway.
So we get this short little scene between Addison and Mark.
Hang on, one thing I did want to point out is Derek goes, "They're your family," and Meredith says, "Why does everyone assume that?" That is a fantastic line.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good line, just saying.
Yeah, so then we get this kind of just short little scene, I think, almost to, like, check in on, like, something that happened at the end of last episode, where Mark promised not to sleep with any other women.
The sex bit. And he's been doing well.
Yeah, so, I mean, go Mark.
We don't know how long it's been since last episode. I'm thinking a week.
Maybe, yeah. But whatever. Go, Mark.
Good job, nice. Mark.
So now we get a lunch scene.
Yes.
We've missed them.
Yes, I love a lunch scene. It's been too long.
And so George is basically giving Meredith the entire lowdown on how Callie is completely wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love how as each new person comes up, they just have to, like, sum up what the other character has just told them. Izzy sits down and she goes, "Christina, did Colin Marlowe?" And then Meredith just goes, "Callie's rich." "Don't talk to her about it." "Her? I'm sorry, I don't have a name anymore."
"Don't tell anyone, those were my words. So she's rich."
And he goes, "Just shut up about it. You think you could do that?"
So George leaves, and then Christina comes.
This
and Izzy delivers part. This line.
This line. She goes, "Colin Marlowe, was it good? Was he good? Did he make you a better lover?"
Do you remember all of the other times I've talked to you about my sex life?
No.
Exactly.
And then Alex just, "Did I miss anything about her doing the old guy?"
She's not talking. Oh, she'll talk. So then Meredith, you know, because she's like, "Well, we're not talking about me. It's been the longest time that people have talked about something else besides me. I need to bring myself up."
Yeah, so she steers it right back to herself. And she says, "I don't cook. How am I supposed to cook for them?" And Izzy's like, "I will make your stupid dinner." But let's remember, she can't cook. She can bake, but she cannot cook. Last time she tried to cook, she, like, destroyed that turkey, and Burke was, like, to infinity and beyond. And he had to save the day.
That's so true. Why didn't Meredith should ask Burke?
Anyway. Oh my god, that would have been amazing. I would have killed for that scene. And then this one. "I will make your stupid dinner. So were there any little blue pills involved? Or was he untouched by time?" And Alex just goes, "Dude, that's just wrong. Don't answer that." Anyway, so it's just like, did he make you a better lover? That's the highlight of this scene.
That's fantastic, yeah. So now we have, you know, all of our men have to have a showdown.
Yeah. The man drama. Just whip him out and measure.
Of course, at the OR board.
And I love when Colin leaves, Derek goes, "He," and Burke goes, "Yes." With, "Yes." Wow. Indeed.
That's literally their entire friendship summed up. Like, just single words, like, nothing being said, whatever. That is their friendship right there.
So now we have Mark and Alex working in Jane Doe's surgery.
Yeah, I was about to say, basically something goes wrong, which is kind of...
predictable.
I was about to say, kind of what I think they all knew was going to happen. Like, it happened, and I was like, yeah, we predicted this. Anyway.
This is so gross. Like, if you weren't grossed out by Colin before this line, ugh. He goes, "You're making an honest woman of Christina Yang. That's impressive. I always thought she was collecting us like baseball cards." Yeah. And you were like, ugh.
Also, if you thought that, why did you go along with it? Like, you're making yourself sound bad, too.
Yeah.
And I was okay with it.
And Burke is like, baseball cards.
And I was one of those cards.
Yeah.
And I was 100% okay about that.
Yeah.
And I will brag.
I was Mickey Mantle, yeah.
But basically, the big kind of shocker of this scene is that Christina and Colin were together for 3 years, which is kind of shocking.
I guess. I guess in a sense, like... that is longer than she's been with Burke.
Yeah, well, I think it's also shocking because she's been really passing this off as some just kind of fling. But, like, they had, like, an entire relationship, basically.
And she never mentioned him to Burke. Yeah, that's
a little... Or anyone, but...
Yeah, well, yeah. But that's a little odd.
I mean, do agree. If you were in her position, would you mention this asshole? Sorry, can I curse?
Yeah, okay. You can curse.
I mean, no, I also wouldn't have dated him for three years.
She probably...
Do you think she was just using him for grades?
I think so.
Yeah, maybe. You know.
It's not unheard
of.
I got that sense.
And that doesn't reflect well on her either. So, yeah, I guess you're right.
Or using him for knowledge, too, because he's an amazing surgeon.
So I guess you're kind of right, Elliot. Like, maybe she...
She's probably embarrassed at this point to a certain degree.
Maybe. I mean, I would be.
Well, and I think she also...
She wasn't before, she is now, because he just, like, grabbed her in front of all of her colleagues.
And he's saying this in front of, in an OR to her boyfriend.
Right.
Well, and just, Beyonce. I mean, even just to her Beyonce. Colleagues. Like,
yeah, the, he's so yeah. Like, smarmy.
Well, I also think in some ways she's become a different person than she was in college. For sure. You know, and so I almost think she's kind of, like, embarrassed of that side of herself, of, like...
I mean, think about who Christina as a character was in the beginning of season one and who she is now. It's very different.
Yeah, exactly. So then, of course, Burke and Christina have a showdown following that disgusting little bit knowledge from Colin.
Yeah, and you told him that you thought marriage was an idiotic institution. And Christina goes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then why did you say yes? Because I wanted to make you happy.
Some people get married for financial reasons. How is that idiotic? It's like they do That's it true. Because it's mutually beneficial mm-hmm. from a financial perspective.
But I think
they're not committed to each other.
I think Burke sees it more in that commitment than financial. Like, he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Christina's I would never fine. Do that. I'm just saying that people do that, you know, and play legal games with their tax returns and stuff like that. And also, sometimes people get married so that an immigrant can gain citizenship status.
But, I mean, I feel like there's a valid argument on both sides here. Like, when she goes, do I give a crap about a ceremony with a dress and a flautist? No. But I'm happy to do it if it'll make you happy. And it's like, that's kind of sweet in a way, but it's also...
problematic.
It's also kind of condescending in a little bit to Burke.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want a nice little wedding ceremony, don't you?
Well, it's like this weird... It's this weird kind of thing where I think she's thinking that the marriage is all about the wedding, mm-hmm. whereas, like, he's wanting a marriage for a marriage.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Whereas, like, she sees, like, a marriage of being, like, you being able to obtain that without getting, like, the piece of paper, you know?
You mean you can obtain that level of commitment?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, not needing that. I don't know.
I think it's almost like she's willing to commit to that level with him, but she thinks it's kind of silly that you need a ceremony.
Yeah. So I think she's just against the wedding part of it.
But not the marriage.
Not the marriage part.
Yeah, and that's... I'm okay with that. Like, I don't think that that's an issue, but I guess it is for Burke, you know?
I think... And the problem is the way that they're communicating about that mm-hmm. is a lot of the problem. Like, I think if they actually had, like, sat down and had that conversation, I think it would have been okay. But the fact that, like, you know, she literally is, like, yelling this and, like, I'm doing it to make you happy. And it's, like... Mm-hmm.
That comes off as not great.
Like, condescending. Kind of, like, I don't actually want this, but you do, so I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, basically we just have this scene between Addison, Derek, and Mark, which already is going to be...
fantastic.
Well, fantastic, but also loaded with drama. Mark is probably just suffering because he hasn't been sleeping with anybody, and, you know, you add Derek into the mix.
Tinder didn't exist yet, so he's all kinds of messed up.
Yeah. And basically they're all trying to show off for Colin Barlow, and it's causing them to do things with their patients that they wouldn't normally do. Yada yada.
Mm-hmm. And basically then, you know, Chief walks up and is like, are you kidding me? Like, you guys are all acting like children. And you're like, no, duh. Have you seen these people before?
It's just like, this is not new behavior. Have you seen season one or two?
It's literally the Emma of this hospital.
All they do is scream
inappropriate things
inappropriate
in the hallway.
In the hallway,
in
loudly.
Public spaces.
For everyone to see. Which is why I love this show.
And then have sex with people that they shouldn't.
Yes.
I mean... You wouldn't expect the chief to be super observant if all this stuff kept going on, right?
The chief is... That's kind of the best part about the chief, is that he's so oblivious to things. Like, when he was sleeping in his office and he couldn't figure out how people could figure it out, and his office is made of glass. He's just like, how did you know I was sleeping in my office?
And Mark... Who was it that literally pointed out to him? They were like, your office is made of glass. Like,
Callie. It was Callie.
We're like, you can literally see it in. Like, we're not stupid.
Yeah. I just love how the chief
he's
is just
like,
kind
how
of...
did you figure this out?
He's, like, so naive and kind of childlike. It's perfect for an authority figure.
Well, again, like this, he's acting like... He's like, my gosh, why are you guys screaming at a patient in the hallway? This never happens. And you're like, this happens every single episode.
Yes. Okay, so now can we cut over to Mr. Schofield's OR? Well, sure. Callie, the chief, and Izzy are here, and I love this moment. I just, Izzy going full bitch attitude towards Callie, I could live off of it. I'm like a sponge. I need it just to soak it up. So Callie's like, weird? This thing's been in there since the Korean War. And Izzy goes, he's got a warped sense of nostalgia. And then Callie says,
I get it. If they pulled a bullet out of me, I'd want to cast it in gold and mount it on my wall.
And Izzy, just as a petty little bitch she is, I love it. She goes, yeah, well, you can afford it.
which she just kind of says that, and then I think has that realization of like, oh shit. Like,
yeah, I shouldn't have said that. And Callie gives her that classic Callie look of like, oh my god. You know that look she always gets where she kind of does that like head thing? Like she like moves her head back and forth and then stares at her really seriously.
Oh, and then love it. Imagine this, but the chief is 100% oblivious and he's like, I need some more suction.
Yeah, the chief is like, what's going on? The chief is Derek. That's why he's so oblivious. Oh what? My gosh, the chief and Derek are the same characters in the generational parallels, and Derek is completely oblivious to the drama.
Oh, okay.
That's so.
But I just like love that. Like they like had this moment, and I need some more suction. We're ready to close. And you're like such an idiot.
And instead of paging Burke, Derek does something in an OR. Just to
basically
show off,
yeah, opens to Helen. Poor Helen's chest, you know. Yeah. All this stuff. Amazing.
So it wasn't medically necessary? Or...
I think it was medically necessary. It's just that they should have waited for Burke because...
They should have called in a heart surgeon.
Yeah.
And not let the brain guy open.
And Colin goes, that's very well... Wait, how do you do a British accent?
I don't know.
That's very well handled, Dr. Shepherd. Very impressive indeed.
And then, you know, of course, Burke... pops up and Colin has to throw Derek under the bus and he's like, I'm literally here to create more drama. Mm. This is my sole purpose in this episode, besides being ugh. But
you know when they he's just the human equivalent of an STD. But also
he's walking hepatitis.
Yeah. Like I'm just afraid to touch anything after he's touched it. But
he's walking chlamydia.
Hello, I'm gonorrhea. Anyway. You know, in 218, we had Mark come for one episode and stir up drama between Mare and Dare. For 318, for 318, we had Colin Marlowe. And which one do you like better?
Colin Marlowe creates more drama, like, with more people. Like, I feel like he just gets into everyone's life. But
like an STD.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I don't know, you can't not love the, like, first, like, Mark, like, scenes. Like, the scenes that he had with Meredith.
Yeah.
Like...
Those are brilliant.
Him, like, going up to Derek and Derek just punching him in the face.
That was awesome.
I think I have to say Mark because he was on the show for a lot longer.
Well, yeah.
Well, I think I liked Mark's introduction better because he was in 218, but then he was gone for the rest of the season. And then he came back in season 3. Yeah. But I kind of liked how they just had him on one episode and then just let it sit for a while to see how people reacted. So now we're going over to Mr. Schofield's room and the chief is like, how you feeling? And he's like, where's my bullet? Is that it? Where's the rest of it?
It's a very tiny piece of bullet.
Yeah.
And the guy's like super upset.
Yeah, he's soups let down by this.
And basically, like, you know, we've had this whole thing, like, between him and Izzy where, you know, he's like, I've been stewing for 50 years. And she goes, maybe it's time to move on.
To what? I lost my whole unit over this. I came home, my wife didn't get it. I've been blazing mad my whole life. I've got nothing left.
It's not too late to let go and start over.
And then he goes, you're a sweet kid, but you don't know what it's like to have something change you in your soul.
And then she goes, I do. I wish I didn't, but I do.
Don't let it turn you.
I have a question here. What is she talking about? Is she talking about, like, Denny dying?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. But I don't know. Well, in a way, you could spin it as if Denny didn't die, she'd probably still be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And this George thing wouldn't be an issue for her.
Fair. Yeah. Which is kind of, oh yeah, because Danny died, which is kind of like the bullet, like getting him getting shot, which then caused him, you know, to lose his wife and friends, you know, him, Danny dying in some way, because, you know, then.
But is Danny dying the bullet, or is it Callie and,
I don't know,
in George's marriage,
I don't
the
know.
True bullet? You tell us. Tweet it in. So now we're at the intern OTP house, and Izzy's like, it's ready. Don't slosh it around. It's all about presentation. And I just kind of love the idea that Izzy is doing this all for Meredith. Like, Meredith just runs into the back and comes out with, like, hey! Like, a whole, like, turkey.
Yeah. But the best part is...
I just made this.
But the best part is, no, Meredith, like, isn't even trying. Like, she flat out, like, she goes in there, and they're like, oh, this looks great. And she's like, Izzy did it. Like,
I love that.
She doesn't even care.
And what do you think about this? Ask about the baby. Ask if it poos. People can talk about it for hours. Do you think that's true?
Probably. I mean, I feel like they could talk about babies for hours. Like, you could ask so many things about a baby, and people would just blah, blah, blah on their baby.
When you have a baby, I'm going to ask it if it poos. Not you, it. I'm going to ask the baby.
If it poos.
I think in response, it might poo.
It can just poo on command. Go now.
So then it's super awkward until Alex walks in, and Alex actually kind of makes it less awkward for the first time in his life. And he's like, sweet, I'm hungry. Like, sits down.
Yeah, so then Meredith takes Izzy's advice and asks about the baby. And then Susan just goes, great. And you're like, oh, God, Susan. But then it gets super awkward because Thatcher starts explaining this old picture that he thought was Molly and was actually Meredith.
And Meredith is like, how fucking dare you?
Yeah.
Which I kind of agree. I kind of understand, you know, how, like, you're already on a touchy, like, thin ice with your estranged father, and then he erases this memory that you have of him. But at the same time,
not even, like, erases it, but, like, puts it with, like, a different child.
Yeah, which is
weird.
Rough.
And then if on cue, the lights go out.
Mm-hmm. And Meredith is like, she just picks up a knife. It's like in Clue, when the lights go out and then they come back on and somebody's dead. Mr. Body.
What happened?
Is he the butler?
Oh my God.
She's like running around, but this is how it could have happened.
Oh my God. Yeah, so basically then, like, Thatcher just kind of walks off and is like, no, I'll go check the breaker or whatever. And
oh, I love this line. She goes, Izzy blew the fuse, of course. And he goes, I'll get it. No, you know, I can get it. It's the laundry room. And then she kind of sits down and, like, blinks for a minute. And she goes, I keep forgetting. And Derek goes, what? And she's just like, it's his house. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. Because I think the audience forgot, too.
Yeah.
Which brings it back to, how hard do you think it is for Thatcher to walk into that house?
Yeah, that would be so weird.
And have dinner with...
your estranged daughter.
Who looks uncannily like Ellis.
And who grew up in this house where you left them.
Yeah. So we're so inside Meredith's head that we're like, this is so bad for Meredith. But, like, think about how it is for Thatcher right now.
Yeah. Plus, I feel like Susan, too. Like, she's just like, this is such an awkward, like, uncomfortable situation. And she's just trying to be so nice.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, these people are so awkward. I can't.
But in a weird way, Susan kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies a little bit. She's like, kind of weird.
She's weird, but I love it. Like, she's like I don't know. I like her kind of weird.
Mm. All right. So the song is Land of No Return by Wild Sweet Orange.
Yeah, so we have another kind of weird scene between Christina and Burke.
Well, Burke does point out a couple solid points. He asks, how did it end between her and Colin? And she goes, school was ending, I was leaving. And she goes, I came here, I fell in love with you. Burke goes, a new mentor with a host of things to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he's not wrong, though.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like this weird thing of, like, I think at first that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's about that anymore.
I don't either.
I also like when he's like, do you or do you not find my knowledge and skill compelling? And I would like to argue with him, like, I think she can love him and still find his knowledge and skill compelling.
Yes. I agree.
You know, like, I don't think that's, like, a one or the other thing.
And then it seems like Burke also has a problem with the age difference.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, if she left Colin from school, came to Seattle Grace, and then met Burke, how much older is Burke?
I mean, he's probably he's definitely older.
Yeah.
Which maybe is, like, also partly, like, he's debating, like, their age difference in some way.
And then he goes, this speech by Burke is very telling, actually, because he goes, you don't open yourself to anyone. Sometimes I think it's charming. She's different. She's not like other women. The simple fact is, you have never let me in. What you think it's going to make a good marriage, because I don't, I don't want you to marry me because you're placating me. That doesn't interest me. Doesn't interest me at all.
Well, I think it also, a lot of this is just showing that the communication in their relationship is just breaking down so much.
I guess it's breaking down, but I think it's also showing that it was never there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think if they could just fix that communication part, it would be okay. Because they really do truly love each other. I mean, they are... I mean, this is an epic love, like, to be honest.
So now we go back to Meredith's dining room, where Susan, Meredith, and Derek are just sitting there in the dark. Like,
where did Alex go? He's like, I already ate. I'm out of here.
Alex is over it.
Back to the gym.
Just working out constantly.
And Derek just leaves because Derek's like, I can't anymore. So he goes to find Thatcher.
I think he wants to have a man-to-man with Thatcher.
I don't know. I feel like Derek's just like, I can't. I'm over this.
Gotta go.
But
then Susan does reveal that this wasn't easy for Thatcher.
Yeah.
And Meredith is kind of like, I don't care.
I also like how when Susan goes, Meredith, it's okay to get angry. It's you in the picture.
Yeah.
Like, and I think... I don't know. I think in some weird way, like, Susan is one of the few people that actually is, like, okay with, like, Meredith being angry with her father sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, almost validating her of being, like, it's okay that you're angry. Like, you are completely valid in feeling those emotions.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Now we get the scene that I have been waiting for 2 seasons. Or at least, yeah, a full season, at least.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like, therapy to me. The Callie-George Izzy love triangle therapy. All right. So, who wants to be Callie and who wants to be George?
I guess I'll be George, then.
Okay.
Don't.
So, are we reading this whole thing?
Yeah, just keep going.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Izzy Stevens, I share something with you that I am clearly uncomfortable about, and you tell Izzy Stevens...
No, I didn't tell Izzy. I told Meredith. Meredith.
Oh, so that's better?
No, it was an accident. It was an accident. I was pissed off. Why can't you give me the benefit of the doubt that maybe sometimes I'm on your side?
Because you choose your friends over me every chance you get.
No, I don't. I married you.
Oh my god. Okay, maybe I should be George.
What? That was amazing. He perfectly pulled off George.
No, he's definitely not that whiny.
He's definitely he's definitely angry in the scene.
He's like, no, I don't.
Read it as angry.
He's like crying. No, I don't.
No, I don't. I married you, and I haven't talked to my best friend in weeks. Meanwhile, you lied to me about where we live and why. You told me about your background. You lied to me about your family. And I'm still the dog who gets whacked on the nose with the newspaper all the time. When is this gonna stop?
Oh, so this is my problem?
Yeah, maybe it is.
Oh, the fact that your best friend violently disses our marriage every chance she gets,
yes.
Publicly, repeatedly... Why do you think she does that, George? You ever think about that?
She's having a problem with this. I understand that.
She has feelings for you.
What?
She wants you. She wants you. That's what this is about. That's why she hates me, George. George, do not laugh at me. Do not laugh at me.
Oh. No, I'm not. Oh, God. It's just she's Izzy. She's blonde. She's stacked. She's a supermodel. I'm George.
So what does that make me?
No, come on, beauty. I almost said beauty. No, come on, you're gorgeous and you're curvy and I never thought you'd go for me.
Just shut up.
Callie!
This is my hotel room that I paid for with my huge piles of money. Get the hell out of it.
Oh my god. That was better than what I could have imagined.
I just wanted to add beautiful in there because it sounded so smarmy. And I don't know. So
let's unload this scene, though.
So,
wow.
So insincere. I assume you're going to cut all this.
No. That, that was like a dinner theater. That was amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the fact that George kind of finally stuck up for himself.
Yes.
To Callie.
And Callie's like, oh, so this is my problem? And it's like, yes. Yes, Callie, this is your problem.
Well, and it's
like, I
can't
believe he's mad at me after I didn't reveal all my secrets. After I didn't tell him basic information about
myself. Well, and I think the thing is, like, this is...
I'm not even a U.S. citizen. Shh.
Don't tell. I think the fact of the matter is like, realistically in a marriage, all of these things should be their problems. Mm-hmm. And the fact that since the beginning, she's been blaming George. Now George is blaming her. Like, they're not looking at this and like, let's fix this together. It's like, you suck. You're doing horrible. This is your problem.
And Callie, I honestly believe that Callie married George because she thought that, as Izzy kind of pointed out, that the piece of paper would change something. And Izzy was right. She goes, it's a piece of paper. It doesn't mean anything, which is true. Because she still, before they got married, she was upset that George always chose his friends over her. That's something she brought up here. Mm-hmm. She's still
insecure
about Izzy. That's something she brings up here. But what about this?
I think she also doubts the fact that George actually loves her.
Which, honestly, I understand.
I think in some ways he does, but I think almost a lot of her constant doubting is almost pushing him away more.
Mm-hmm. But when she... How do you feel about the point where she goes, she has feelings for you?
I mean...
Did you see that coming?
Not blatantly, but as soon as she said it, it was like, yeah.
You're like, oh, shit. Maybe she's right.
You know, like, it made sense.
But I also love the line when George goes, she's having a problem with this. I understand that. And yeah. You're like, oh, George. And then the line where he goes, she's Izzy. She's blonde. She's stacked. She's a supermodel. I'm George. So is that basically saying that, like, he never thought he had a chance with her?
Yeah.
Now you? I thought I had a chance.
Yes, but, like...
Which is why she's so upset.
Right. Yeah. But in a way... Is that him saying, like, if I thought I had a chance with Izzy, I would never have been with you?
I don't know.
Because that's, like...
Some deep shit, but...
That yeah. is some fucked up shit, George. I mean, that's basically what he said.
Yeah.
And then what he does in return?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean, does in return?
Well, at the end of this episode. After a fight like this, he goes...
Oh, that's right. They both get trashed, right?
Yeah, but after a fight about Izzy... He runs to Izzy mm-hmm. with alcohol.
Yeah.
Because is that him being like, holy crap, wait, does Izzy actually want me? So now I can go see if she, you know?
I think he knows he married the wrong person.
Yes.
At this point. Mm-hmm. And
I could have told you that.
They weren't really friends before this, were they? I mean.
Callie and George?
Yeah.
No.
So he's going to his friend talk about it.
I was about to say, I think he honestly goes to Izzy.
With pure intentions.
With pure, like, I need a friend in this moment mm-hmm. to tell you about all of this. And then,
yeah,
you know, when you're in love with your best friend and you go to complain about your wife with alcohol, mm-hmm. you know, shit happens.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so now let's cut over to... So I think it was also on purpose that they had this Callie-George scene and then they immediately went over to Izzy-Alex. I think that... They had to get Alex kind of out of the way before they did this George and Izzy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he goes, she goes like, I guess not interested really meant not interested. And Alex goes, you didn't want me. And she goes, yeah, but that doesn't mean I want you to want anyone else. Am I going to be alone pining over a dead guy forever?
I do like in some ways that like, I think Alex was kind of finally able to get through to her a little bit.
Mm.
And, like, I don't know, like, this was a very sweet scene to me of, like...
I thought so, too.
Him kind of, like, supporting, like, you'll move on when you're ready to.
Mm-hmm. But I also, I know a lot of people, so this is a line that a lot of people don't like about Izzy when she goes, I didn't want you to want anyone else. But that's such a good line because I feel like that's true.
I was about to say, it's also a very true emotion. I mean, mm-hmm. anyone, if you've like broken up with someone and they start dating someone else or like, you know, that kind of thing. And like, I feel like, you know, sometimes, I mean, you know, maybe you're not over them or like whatever the situation is, like there is some kind of weirdness in there.
Or even if you are like over them, it's still hard to see them with somebody else.
Yeah.
still like weird.
Yeah. I don't think that's like a horrible feeling. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. maybe it's bad to say out loud, but I think a lot of people have had that kind of feeling.
Again, but Izzy is almost the personification of that voice in your head that says those things that you're not supposed to say out loud.
Fair.
Which is why I love her.
Mm-hmm. She's all id.
Yeah. That was a good way to put it. And I love how Christina busts into the dining room. She goes, I'm having a crisis. And Meredith goes, oh, we don't need rescuing. Susan is very nice and we're getting through it. And then Susan is like limping through, but we'll make it. And Christina goes, no, this isn't a fake crisis. This is a real, my ex is about to ruin my impending wedding crisis. And then George busts in and he goes, hey, where's Izzy? And Meredith goes, kitchen. And then she goes to Susan, sorry, it's not always like this. And Christina goes, yeah, it kind of is. Like, why she said that was so funny to me.
Which, like, she has a point. Like, this house is insane most of the time.
Their neighbors are probably like, oh my god, I hope they don't have another party.
Oh my god, if they had another party.
Why weren't the police called to the first one?
That would have been amazing if that's how that party ended, with the police busting Meredith.
She's like dancing in the driveway and the police roll up.
Hey guys.
Oh my gosh. And okay, so let's do this. I will be George.
They're in the other room.
I need you to get over yourself. I need you to start liking my wife. I need you to like her because sometimes I don't, and I need you to talk me back into it. You say you're my friend, that's the job.
Okay.
I need to vent, and I need it to be okay.
Okay.
And I need to vent with alcohol. And then Izzy starts pouring it or whatever. And then George suddenly looks like a scared little boy, you know? And he goes, I got married and I'm scared it was a bad idea.
Nobody ever got married and didn't think that at least once. Which is arguably the nicest thing Izzy has said about this marriage.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is still not the nicest thing.
And I think it was also a bit from Mr. Schofield. He was like, don't let it turn you. And so this is her finally trying to like,
be
a bigger person and like extend the olive branch. But I don't know if that's true. Nobody ever got married and didn't think that at least once.
Yeah.
So now we get a Derek and Thatcher scene. Raise your hand if you've been waiting for this the whole show. Oh, Elliot raised both hands.
Woohoo! It's just so like weird. Like, I don't know how or what to talk to her about. And Derek just goes, work.
All we do is work.
Which is valid. Like,
I also like how Thatcher can kind of talk about that sort of thing, because later down Derek says, I almost lost a friend in my own OR, and Thatcher goes, was it your fault? Yeah. Like, I feel like this is revealing that he was once married to a surgeon. Yeah. You know, because this isn't what a layperson would say in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Thatcher goes, she was nervous, and Derek goes, yeah, she's mm-hmm. tough. She tries to hide it. She's difficult, but if you make an effort, she's worth it. But that's so cute from Derek's point of view.
Yeah.
He was just like, she's worth the effort.
Yeah.
It's like, aw.
So wholesome.
I know. Derek's adorable.
We need this. So Derek gets a page and is called back to the hospital.
I love Thatcher's little, like, gotta go back in, and Derek goes, yeah. And he just kind of shakes his head and laughs, because he's so used to it.
Yeah, you know? He knows.
Yeah.
So then we cut back immediately to Helen's room, where she's like, what the hell is there?
wait, hang on, Elliot, what did she say?
Why is there an 11-inch... No, I can't say it.
You can do it.
That's a tongue twister. When I try and do this accent, it's a tongue twister. Why is there an 11-inch incision in my chest?
So they're talking, and then Derek reveals, you know, the tumor. We never have to go back in there again. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So if this is a metaphor for Meredith
giving up,
is this Derek getting to be the hero?
In some way, yeah.
This is what Derek wants, is to be the hero.
Or I even think in some ways of being metaphoric of, like, if you give it one more chance, we can get it all out. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if she talks about it or does something, you know, like
deals with it,
you know, we can get it all out and work through it kind of thing.
Okay. I see that. So now Thatcher and Susan are finally leaving. Yeah. This is so interesting. Thatcher goes, I'm sorry about your mother. Thank you. And he goes, swing is still here. Yeah. It doesn't swing. Nobody uses it. And he pulls out a nail out of the, like, I don't even know where it was, but I put this in there. You used to catch your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what was confusing to me was that then Meredith pushes the swing and it swings. Does that mean the nail kept the swing from swinging?
Yeah, because they bored a hole. I guess it was either pulled back or it was in the middle position, and he drilled a hole in between the side of the swing and the bench, and then he stuck a big long nail through it, and she just never noticed that it was there to prevent it from moving back and forth.
Oh.
She just assumed that it was broken somehow. I don't know. It seems like a very basic thing to figure out. But
this is Meredith.
Meredith isn't the smartest human being, but...
I only know bodies. I don't know other mechanical things.
That's why the neighbors haven't complained. Their bodies are probably in Meredith's closet.
I only know bodies. But I found that interesting. And what is the metaphor there? That it's like, maybe they do have a chance to...
Why does there have to be a metaphor? Maybe she just caught her fingers too many times.
Right, but there's something about the, like, that moment.
Like, you just have to take one piece out, or like...
Yeah, like, why did they throw that moment in? You know, there's got to be a deeper meaning of showing that Thatcher was a good father, showing that...
In some ways, probably.
Yeah. He cared.
Somehow. He did care. Or showing that he still remembers that is meaningful.
Maybe it's showing that you can be a good person and just have addiction problems.
Yeah. Although it wasn't his addiction problems of the reason he left. It was Ellis being a bitch.
She was having an affair, right?
Yeah.
Was he also having an affair?
No.
No.
She actually moved to Boston with Meredith and left him, and he never tried to follow. Anyway, so this next scene could revive me from certain death. This is probably in my top, 10 Izzy George scenes of all time?
I have no idea.
Probably. It's amazing. So they're on the kitchen floor, and they are plastered. Just hammered.
Also, I love the fact that they're, like, getting plastered, and nobody else in the house realizes. And, like, Meredith and her family are just, like, right in the other room, and they're completely hammered in here. And Meredith's like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Susan walks in, oh, hey, Susan.
Hey.
Hey, would you like to join us?
Like, it's just funny, but... And Izzy's basically trying to get George to apologize.
And they're just like, Izzy's pouring more, and she goes, hey, don't be grabby. And he goes, I don't have any. Like, they're just so drunk. And then Izzy goes, maybe you're wrong all the time. Maybe she's just insecure. It doesn't matter. You still have to grovel.
She's insecure. That is a fact. She's insecure.
No shit.
What? What? Just tell me. And then she goes, come on. Come on. And it's so adorable and cute.
It's just nothing. She thinks you have feelings for me, and that's the problem.
And Katherine Heigl, her laugh brings me utter joy, because she goes, I love it.
And that I desperately want you.
And she's just dying crying. She's like, laughing. She's like, I'm crying. Is she crazy? And then George says, I think she might be a little crazy.
Which, like, yes, everyone in this hospital is.
And she goes, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. It's so funny. And then...
And then they have, like, a little moment.
Yeah, and you're like, ooh.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then they cut away. And the song Move You by Anna Marina.
Sure.
I love this song.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Did anyone give a crap about the Jane Doe storyline in this episode?
No.
Because I did not.
Nobody cared.
Also, does she...
I didn't care about it throughout the whole show. I thought it was a big waste of time, I mean, to fair. Be honest.
But also, does she give you the creeps? Like, I feel like this scene in particular was supposed to be, like, this weird, endearing scene between the two of them. And I just was like, it's like the same thing with Colin. Like, I was like, ugh.
Yeah, when she goes, can you at least sit with me and tell me a bedtime story? And I'm like,
I was like, leave the hospital.
It's like, ugh. Well, I don't think her face is helping anything.
It's so mean.
It's so true, though. So Derek's back at the hospital, which is why Christina is in bed with Meredith. I love this too, when she goes, am I gonna screw up this engagement? And Meredith says, I don't know, do you want to? And Christina says, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
And Meredith has been in denial about her mom being dead, and she wants to, you know, sweep it under the rug and say she's fine, but then she goes, my mom is dead. And Christina's like, yeah, she is.
Mm-hmm. And then they just, like, oh, they're so cute.
So Alex is sleeping in George's old room.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because that's his new room.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, because Alex lives there. That's why he was... Wow. Okay. Christina... Meredith puts an arm around Christina in her sleep. I was like, oh, that's so cute. So they're all sleeping, and then we're like, huh.
Interesting.
This is nice. And then we cut to Izzy sleeping. Waking up. Yeah. She rolls over, and she sees George in bed with her, and she's just like, huh. This is weird. My head is killing me. I have a terrible hangover.
Yeah.
And she looks under the sheets and she's like, we insinuate as an audience that she's naked.
Yeah. And Grey's Anatomy just drops the hammer and you're like,
Grey's
oh,
Anatomy
wow.
has done it again. This is peak Grey's Anatomy. This is why I love this show. Take my firstborn child. I was like, yes, it's happening. It's finally happening. And just, that's it. That's the cliffhanger of the episode.
Yep.
George and Izzy just slept with each other.
Yep, and it just leaves us there.
Like, what? Where'd your mind go when you first saw that? Were you disgusted? Were you happy?
George's marriage is done.
But were you kind of exhilarated by it, like, in a way? Because I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I love Grey's Anatomy.
I wasn't exhilarated by it. It's kind of sad that he married the wrong person.
It's true.
I was about to say, it was kind of this weird moment where I was like, you know, it's sad because of the way that they got together. Like,
yeah,
you know what I, like, it was something that, like, obviously, like, we at this podcast have been waiting for. But it wasn't, like, I don't know, like...
It wasn't... Without
obvious problems.
Yeah. But how very Grey's Anatomy is that?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean,
like Shades of Grey. Like, they weren't going to get together in this perfect, beautiful way. It was going to be some dysfunctional way.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they earned it. Like, they set it up and they really earned it. And it didn't just feel like it came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been tracking it since season 2.
Yeah.
Anyway. So here's a notes and trivia. I don't think anyone gives a shit, but when Izzy goes into Meredith's room after she comes out of the shower, you can see a tag on her back of something she's wearing underneath the towel.
So, fascinating stuff.
All right. So seriously count is zero.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Now it's one.
patient rankings. There are 3 patients, Elliot. And so maybe you can do it after we rank ours, but you want to go first?
Sure. Just do all of them or start
no,
from
just
number 3?
No, just do number 3.
Number 3 was Jane Doe because, as I said earlier, I did not give a crap about her storyline.
Yeah, she was suspiciously boring.
Suspiciously?
My number 3 is Jane Doe, too. Just nothing. Don't
Same.
Care. Okay. My number 2 is Helen.
Okay.
I do find her quite annoying. But I also... I think this episode was very much a George, Izzy, Callie,
mm-hmm.
Christina... Colin thing, and I didn't get enough from Helen, you know, like, I don't really care about Derek's friend, maybe not friend from his past.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the real meat of the episode, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So that's why. You're number 2?
I had Schofield, because I liked the kind of, like, I don't know, just, like, the whole giving up storyline with Helen and, like, Derek and that kind of thing, and so that's why I think she edged out for me mm-hmm. to be number 1, but...
Elliot?
I think Schofield's number 1 because...
Oh, we're on number 2 right now.
I mean, but you kind of...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so... Yeah,
process
whatever.
Of elimination.
Yeah, but who's your number 2?
Well, Helen, because she... While she had a very fun accent, I don't know, I just didn't really connect with her. Schofield's story was kind of more meaningful to me, and the fact that he was able to relate it to something Izzy was going through or had gone through was...
I love that.
Interesting.
I did love that moment. Yeah, Schofield's my number 1. I kind of like the imagery of just having this, like, literally carrying around this bullet, literally carrying around this scar, you know, mm-hmm. that ties into the theme, and this, like, kind of twisted, macabre souvenir that has been ruining your life for so long, and then... putting all your chips in on it and then realizing that there's no way to prove it. And it's almost like if you had just moved on and let go, it would have been better.
Yeah.
Which is actually interesting now that we think about it, because Meredith let go and that was a bad thing.
Yeah.
But if Mr. Schofield let go, it would have been a good thing.
Yeah, it's like differences of like giving up or letting go and
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. And I like how they brought up that fragged thing.
Fragging, yeah.
Because that's... the chief right now. He feels like he's being attacked by his own people.
Yeah. Make one change?
I don't know how you would really change anything.
Give Helena a better accent.
That's not possible. But, you know, something with Jane Doe. There was one Addison scene, or there was a couple, but not enough Addison in this episode. I don't know what they really would have done with it, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
If I had to make one change, I think I would have Alex doing something else.
That's what I was going to say. I think the make one change, the Jane Doe storyline just fell really, I mean, obviously really the entire thing, but especially this episode just really flat for me.
Mm-hmm. So can we scroll down to the Grey Matter blog?
Sure.
There is a couple things I wanted to read. Can you read that for us?
The moments you wait for in a job like this are ones like when Shonda calls you into the writer's room and says, you know how we talked about maybe George and Izzy sleeping together? Put that in your episode. That's when you smile and try to be cool and say, oh, sure, I can find room for that. And then you leave the writer's room and do the biggest happy dance you've ever done, and it goes on for a while until you realize somebody from the script department is standing nearby and watching and now thinks you're epileptic.
Solid.
And then, can you read the part that I just bolded?
Yeah, so then they go on and says, well, it was bound to happen, right? Best friends. They get each other like no one else, nobody else gets them. They share everything. It's easy. It's natural. It's like gravity. How can you fight it? How can you not fall?
And then she goes on, that Izzy and George, who have shared every moment, every minute of the most intense time in their lives, turn to each other in every success, in every failure, and every breakup, and every triumph, with every piece of gossip and every bit of pain, should share everything, share their hearts and their souls and their other parts. What, it makes sense, right? Right up to the he's married part. That's where it kind of all falls apart.
Yeah.
And I do like what she has to say. Callie gets a pretty raw deal here. She's tough, which is good. She needs to be. But she gets a pretty raw deal. To be fair, Callie is not some innocent trod upon martyr. She lied about something kind of big. And then threw off the handle when she found out George told his friends. And she flies off the handle at George a lot. Thank you. Oh, the whole, why am I always the dog getting whooped on the nose with the newspaper thing? I think he's really got a point there. Callie was into the relationship first and pissed that George wasn't there faster. Callie was in love first and pissed that George wasn't there faster. There's a lot of Callie being pissed for George having feelings different than hers, and he's allowed to have his own feelings. She doesn't have to enjoy it, but she can't really blame him for it, and she does a lot. He's apologizing a lot, and it's got to be exhausting. Oh, that's so satisfying to hear the writer say that. Still, you shouldn't turn around and sleep with your best friend. I mean,
especially when you're married to someone else. But that's your advice for the week, children. Don't sleep with someone else while you're married.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You're the old married...
Heard it here first.
Yeah. You're the old married man.
Let me give you the scoop. It's a bad idea.
The lowdown.
But what's interesting is she goes, but I'm okay with it in the end. I think I am. Because, you know, Izzy slept with George.
Interesting.
So, they picked a Izzy-George shipper to write this episode. Which I'm kind of glad, in a way. Deborah Kahn apparently is a huge Izzy-George shipper.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you, girl. And you know what? This might be a controversial take for this podcast to take because we only have like one listener as is, and we might lose that one listener when we say this. But this is a pro Izzy George podcast. I think I speak for Becca.
When we say this?
I
was about to
say that. I think no, I speak for Becca.
I agree.
Izzy is a home wrecker. Hotel wrecker, I'm sorry.
Yeah, fair. Ooh,
that was good. So,
burn, Callie.
In your fucking face, Callie. Pow, pow, pow. This whole episode is a pow,
here
pow, pow.
My Zippos. Burn.
Anyway, any last thoughts by anybody? I cannot wait to talk about it next week.
I don't think so.
I can't wait to watch Callie crash and burn.
Nope.
Anyway, All right, so next week we're talking about Season 3, Episode 19, My Favorite Mistake, written by Chris Van Dusen, directed by Tamara Davis. If you want to get in touch with us, you can on Twitter, at Grey's Uncut. Our email is greysanatomyuncut@gmail.com. Our website is greysanatomyuncut.home.blog. And if you would be so kind, please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's good for our ratings.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you guys.
Bye.
Hasta la vista.